If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast in association with Future Radio 107.8 FM. I'm your host Dave Freezer, teeing up our end of season special Pinkin Live 3, looking back on a very special and surreal Norwich City season with the columnists from the EDP and Evening News. But for now, I'm going to hand over to the unmistakable voice of Stephen Fry, reading a poem entitled To Those We've Missed.
It's been a funny old year. Well, that's to put it lightly. Around this time last season, we fell down despite our fighting, and the stream of, oh, it's inevitable for a small club like ours, came tumbling in as surely as frustrating VARs. Factor in the lack of fans, the ones who keep us going. And who would have expected the performances we've been showing? Krull's Safe Pair of Hands, towering Handley at the back, Buendia's midfield wizardry, some little-known Finn in attack. In recent times, being a Norwich fan has been, let's say, a roller coaster. I mean, there have been loads of lows, the 7-1 to Colchester, but Thark and Webber's success is legendary. Modern-day heroes ensuring Carrow Road will never feel too far from home. I think it's times like these that force our love to run deeper. Our most unprecedented achievement, but with no one there to see it. So, cut through me, I bleed yellow and green. Forbes, Fashionette, Keelan, the kind of passion of which other clubs could only dream. Distance is the hardest part of any relationship, so there's a special kind of feeling in returning to what we've missed. And when the new season begins, whether through glory, rise or fall, just picture crowds of fans united. Proudly singing, On the Ball. The canaries are rising from the ashes, and I dare say it, looking stronger than ever before, because it's the club we live and die for, the club we love, and so much more.
Hello and welcome to Pinkin Live 3, celebrating Norwich City's title triumph as they bounce back to the Premier League in style. We're having a bit of a special night for you tonight, the Pinkin promotion party. We've already had the first two courses, as I saw my colleague Connor described it on Twitter earlier. Your starter was that poem from the one and only Stephen Fry. It's titled To Those We've Missed. It's dedicated to the Norwich City fans who weren't able to be in the stadium for such a brilliant season. It was written by Joe Webb, who is Norfolk's young laureate. You can read all about that at the Pinkin on the Pinkin.com website. The main course already on the Pinkin YouTube channel, which was our documentary, The Way Back, which hopefully a lot of you have just watched the premiere of. That's just come to a close. I haven't actually watched it yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it later, but I've been getting set up for Pinkin Live 3, so very much looking forward to having a beer and catching up on that shortly. But I will kick off with our first segment of the night. I'm going to be joined by my colleague Paddy Davitt shortly, the voice of Norwich City, Chris Gorham from BBC Radio Norfolk, and our long-serving photographer Paul Chesterton are all going to be with us in just a minute for the first segment of Pinkin Live 3. I can see that some of your comments are already dropping through. Anthony Merritt, great season, On the Ball City. Sammy Mason, great watch. Simon Turner, On the Ball City. So keep those coming and we'll try and stay on top of them as best we can all night. We do just want to point out at the top of the show, though, that we are supporting a charity tonight. Of course, we in December, Chris Sutton lost his dad, Mike Sutton, who was involved with Norwich City when he was younger. He had a long battle with dementia. So as you can see, the Jeff Astle Foundation, they do a lot of work to try and support retired players and research into the issue of head injuries and the long term effects of football. One of our other columnists, Ewan Roberts, has been committed to a UEA study along the similar lines. But if you would like to support the Jeff Astle Foundation, then their website, thejeffastlefoundation.co.uk/donate is the place to go. Of course, Duncan Forbes, Martin Peters, players in recent years that we've lost to similar issues. So if you'd like to spare a couple of pounds in their direction, then by all means do. Right, let's kick off with the first part then and bring in Paddy, Chris Gorham and Paul Chesterton. Hello, boys. Thank you very much for joining us.
Mr. Gorham, that's a treasure trove of ex-Norwich tops I see behind you, my young man.
Absolutely right, yeah. This is, I've just dug out my collection of the shirts that I grew up with. Well, you can see I've put them up there behind me so they don't look quite as small as they actually are. But that's what I grew up wearing when I was first going to games. I've still got them. You can't bring myself to throw them away.
Top stuff. And that's a good little segue, Pad, because, of course, that shirt behind me, we're giving it away at halftime. Our quiz, for those who watched the first two Pink and Lives, it was Paddy v Connor. I've got another one set up. Connor has won the first two, so can Paddy get revenge? We shall see. Mr. Chesterton, how are you doing? Unfortunately, I guess your emotions are still bubbling a little bit because West Ham are just lost. Your first true love.
Yeah, no pun intended with the bubbling thing there, obviously. But I actually own three Norwich shirts myself now, so perhaps I should have put them behind me as well.
Should have done, Paul. Should have done. Missed the trick, mate.
Courtesy of my friends in Norwich City, yeah. I've managed to acquire three so far, so yeah. A little bit disappointed with the West Ham result today, but, you know, Everton a bit of a bogey team, so.
Well, there you go. Norwich can give you a bit of a lift. I mean, that's not always been the case in over a decade of covering the club, but there's always ups and downs. But let's kick off first. If I come to you, Pad, just to reflect on Barnsley on yesterday, that 2-2 draw, the season coming to an end, and it's been a special season, but it's been a surreal season. That seems to be the word that most of us are using, isn't it?
Yeah, and the main reason for that, of course, as we all know, sadly, all these lovely fans hopefully tuning in tonight, in the main, bar one or two pilot events, not been able to attend. And, you know, let's hope this is, well, to be fair, it's a full season and the overhang from the project restart. But we can but hope that the government's roadmap coming out of this pandemic will allow, if not a full house from the start of the Premier League season, at least a significant proportion of fans back, because, and we'll get into it in more detail. And of course, you know, we've all followed the fortunes of this club this season. It has been a special season on the pitch, probably a season unlike any other in terms of the demands placed on Daniel and the players and all the backroom staff. But something has been missing. And Daniel is the first to talk about, you know, bringing it to Barnsley yesterday. We know it was about the trophy, but also it was about, sadly, saying goodbye to two absolute legends, as he called them, Alex Tete and Mario Brancic. And while there were some great scenes, we're seeing one or two of Paul's pictures now, it missed certainly a full away end at Oakwell, which it would have been to give those guys the send-off they deserved. And when Daniel says hopefully they can have a delayed party to celebrate staying up in the Premier League, get those guys back and they can get the send-off they deserve. So, for me, on the pitch, an unbelievable achievement. I've only really followed the club's fortunes probably 10 years or so, but certainly unparalleled in that period. I think you'd go a long way to find an achievement as good on the pitch. But ultimately, there is that underlying sadness that, sadly, for the most part, the fans have had to follow from afar. And, you know, I'm sure the pride and the joy that they've felt has been a little bit diminished simply because they've not been able to be part of it. And it was great. I mean, you're in for a treat, Dave, watching that documentary. I just watched that for the first time. And it's a wonderful piece of work from our guys, Connor and Tony. But Simon Thomas, big Norwich fan, you know, formerly of Sky Sports, talks about that. He says when he's a granddad and he turns to his grandkids and talks about this season, he won't be able to talk lovingly about the games he was at Carrow Road to experience, you know, as a fan inside the stadium. And I guess what he says there echoes across the whole Norwich fan base. It will forever more be an unforgettable season, but sadly a season when, you know, the people who really matter, which is the fans, were not able to be inside the stadium and living it with the players and with Daniel.
It has been an unforgettable season, no doubt about that. Chris, speaking to Alex Tetty after the game yesterday, I think we did our best to make him cry, but we weren't the only ones, were we? Everyone in the Norwich camp, we're trying to get him crying, and then I think they succeeded.
Yeah, he was pretty much in tears already, wasn't he? But before we even spoke to him, I think the occasion was really getting to him. I think there were clearly tears in his eyes when he was leaving the pitch after being substituted during the game yesterday. And I think I've just been dwelling on this. I think for him, it's probably a blessing in disguise that we haven't got the big ceremony in the city this year, isn't it? With the balcony and all of that, we'd all love to have it. That's what's really missing, the open top bus tour. But I really don't think Alex Tetty could cope with it. He was struggling yesterday. He even told us that he didn't want to start the game. He was so worried about how he was going to cope emotionally. He didn't want to play. But yeah, I mean, I felt really glad to interview him yesterday at the end of the game. He was in tears, but he had a medal round his neck. And it did feel like, if you're going to go, and all players eventually have to leave Norwich City, that is the way to go out. Of course, it would have been much better if the fans had been there and had been able to get that proper round of applause, that proper ovation that he deserves for nine incredible years with the club. He's been through so much. But if you're going to leaving as a champion with the medal and being applauded off, now, not every player gets that. There are many other Norwich City heroes and Norwich City legends down the years who've not been afforded that sort of reception when they've gone. So, yeah, he and Mario as well, but Alex Tetty in particular will always be fondly remembered no matter what happens, because they've just done so much for the club.
Absolutely. What a legend. And he leaves in 32nd place overall in the all-time appearances list. He's the only Norwich player to have been promoted to the top flight on three separate occasions. There's loads of things you can roll out. Paul, from a photographer's point of view, Alex Tetty is absolute gold, isn't he? Because he must just have one of the best smiles in football.
He has. I do have a story about Alex. Remember the toe poke at Old Trafford?
Right.
Normally at a Premier League game, you'll get a snapper in every corner of the ground. I was obviously in front of the Norwich fans, and there was no snapper. He scored and he rang to the other corner. There was not one single photographer.
Oh, yeah. In the corner.
And of course, I'm literally screaming, "This way, Alex, please, this way, at least run the other way." He scored an amazing toe poke. I can only just imagine what the look on his face was like, but no one photographed it that day. But yeah, I mean, yesterday I found him quite good to photograph. I could tell he was emotional from the moment he led the team out through the Guard of Honour. And that moment, I was actually wandering around to get to the trophy lift when I saw him being substituted. And I caught the photos of him, pretty emotional himself and Daniel at the end. I wish I'd been the stand side, yeah, behind that, because I'm pretty sure I saw Daniel and a couple of others wipe a tear away as well. You know, it's a good moment. It's one of my favourite moments of the season there.
Yeah. It's been emotional. Well, I'll come to you and Chris on a similar vibe. So if I come back to Chris to start with, but obviously with fans not being there, although we've been there and that's been a great privilege, there's been a lot of challenges this season in media terms in how we've actually provided the coverage that we have done, haven't we? So Chris, to start with you, I mean, some of the away games you weren't able to do this year and you've had to do it off tube and things like that, haven't you? So how challenging did you find it? And did you manage to sort of find ways to make it enjoyable or to make it work that little bit better?
I think I...
Oh, that's perfectly timed, isn't it? The technology's given up on Chris just the moment we're talking about the technology. Okay, well, I'll come back to Chris then. Paul, let's turn that to the photography side of things. How challenging have you found it? And what have you sort of found are the best ways to make it work?
At times, very challenging. I mean, start of the season, we were literally limited to one position. So obviously, I'm always keen to do Norwich attack. I have to do Norwich attack, you know. I have to be behind the opposition goal. And I found myself at Carrow Road and some away grounds where I was literally up the other end. So I was having to photograph, you know, Norwich attacking the wrong end, which was a bit weird. Bournemouth, they stuck me up in the stands. I had an absolutely dreadful position.
Oh, yeah. I remember you weren't happy about that.
No, I was watching you two bake in the sun most of the game that day. it's been a challenge. And then it eased up a little bit. Some clubs, it varied from club to club. You know, Huddersfield was a free-for-all, just sit where you want. But some places were very strict to the rules, you know. Everyone tried to obey the rules and it was difficult and very frustrating, you know, when you see it go up the other end and it's the players are running and jumping in front of other snappers and you haven't got that picture. You've got it from 150 yards away or 100 yards away from the wrong end. It's very frustrating. But as the season went on, everyone relaxed a little bit. And as long as everyone followed the COVID protocol, you know, changing ends, staying socially distant, then towards the end of the season, we had no issues. Yeah. So it worked out. But then that made you be creative. That, if you're looking from the other end, I had more chance to photograph Tim Krul, some of the defenders, which I don't normally do because I'm at the other end. So it had its challenges, but, you know, you get around it. So.
Well, he's still done a great job, hasn't he, Pad, as usual. But looking at the photos, you know, in terms of sort of the souvenir things, you know, like the Evening News tomorrow has got a sort of wraparound of the big celebration photos and things like that. But just without the fans behind them, they still just feel that sort of that little bit hollow, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I mean, my favourite one, Paul was talking about some of his favourite images, was Sheffield Wednesday, when it probably worked in your favour, PC, at Hillsborough, when you had, from behind the goal, the Cantwell curler. That's a superb, you know, frame of, because you can see the way the shot is. You can see the minute the ball leaves his foot to Kieran Westwood, I think it was, full length, and it's going right in the top corner, post his stamp. And, of course, that was a huge goal in the context of the season, wasn't it? So we've just got Chris back now, just talking, Chris, about the challenges of doing our job in a pandemic, you know, in terms of the accreditation and the access. And I mean, there was a period you guys didn't actually travel to the games. That's right, isn't it?
Sorry, I lost you there, chaps, but I've come back with you now. You're right. We had a situation where local radio reporters weren't travelling to games, which was understandable because it was around Christmas time and it was when we were in the real height of the pandemic. But it was good to get back on the road for the last few away games of the season. But I think I'd agree with you. It's been a really different season because of the lack of fans. I think it will go down as one of those seasons which won't have all the stories around it because of the supporters not being there. And we always love hearing the fans' tales of where they've been and their experiences of being at games. So it does lack something because of that. I would say that, yeah, it's been a huge challenge in some ways, just because from a commentary point of view, you do rely on that atmosphere that's in the ground. You rely on the big roar you get from the crowd whenever there's a goal, and not having that, even for the real big moments of the season, you know, the late Mario Vrančić goals right at the start of the season against Birmingham and Wickham, the ones later on, you know, the 7-0 against Huddersfield. Imagine if the ground had been full there. Even, you know, last weekend, the win over Reading where Norwich clinched the title, not having the Carrow Road roar for those games. I mean, you really do miss it. And as much as Norwich have been brilliant on the pitch and we can't fault the performances, I have missed that sense of community that goes with it. I haven't spoken to many fans in person this season, even you lads. I mean, we've sort of communicated over Zoom more than anything else, haven't we? So, yeah, we've had our football, but we haven't had, you know, the true match day experience. Although I think this is the first time I've ever seen Paul Chesterton at room temperature. So that's nice. He's always in the coldest part of the ground, isn't he? So it's nice to see what he looks like underneath all the hat and the coat that he's usually wearing.
Well, that was amazing timing that your internet dropped out just as we were talking about the challenges of technology. But thankfully we've got you back. Paul, have you got a canary or something in with you?
No, it's a bird. I mean, I'm not in a countryside place. I'm in quite an urban environment. But apparently, yeah. There's a few birds on my roof and in the garden. So, yeah, that's from me, yeah.
I thought you'd shown real commitment to the cause and got yourself a pet canary for the...
I got enough ribbon from my left hand.
Well,
canary's shirt. Can you imagine what's like that in canaries as well?
I can only imagine. Right, well, just to close this segment then, for Paul, in terms of the football, I guess it's slightly different when you're looking down the eye of a camera and things like that all the time anyway, but just how much have you enjoyed seeing how well Norwich have done in terms of the way they managed to shake off the relegation hangover so impressively?
I did worry. Obviously, the end of the Premier League was a disaster, wasn't it? I mean, it was game after game of defeat. And they seem to have a little hangover at the start of the season, but then they seem to get over it quite quickly. I think Brentford away was a pivotal result. I can't remember exactly when that was in the season, but that's when I started to think, actually, do you know what? These are going to be contenders again. Mm. I think the football they played has been brilliant. Like Chris said, and everyone said, I miss the fans. I miss the fans badly. You know, when you go to, sort of, you travel all the way to Middlesbrough or whatever, or on a long away ground, and you walk in the ground and there's no one there. You might as well be at Coney, or you could play over my local sports centre. There's no fans there. And it's quite a sort of depressing environment sometimes, you know. But the football on the pitch has been really good. I've really enjoyed it. It was good to photograph some of the fans with the celebration at the end, you know, the last two or three games when they won the promotion and when they won the championship. That was good. But in terms of the football, yeah, it's been good. They're obviously going to need to strengthen in some places. I just hope they can keep all their key players. You know, that's it to me. Oliver Skip is the key, really, to me. Well, what happens with Oliver Skip? You know, he's much talked about. He's had that horrible injury now. If they can keep him and strengthen, I think they've got a good chance. I don't think they'll do as badly as they did two or three seasons or a couple of seasons ago. I think they can stay up if they strengthen. But the football, they played the good football. I like the way they still try and play the good football. You know, it's been an enjoyable season for the most part. But like everyone has said, there's 20-30% missing at the games. There's been some odd results. There's been some odd results in the Premier League. There's been odd results in the Championship. And I think that's down to the fact that every game doesn't feel like a home or away game. It just feels like another training game. Yeah. You know, it would have been interesting to have this season with the fans there. Like you say, there's been games when the Norwich have been behind. I think the fans at Carroll Road would have brought them back up. You know, and again, the away fan, the away support with Norwich is always superb. And I think away from home, we've had a couple of Swansea away. Imagine what that would have been like if there had been a couple of thousand Norwich fans. Yeah. I think that would have been the game that we saw. I think it would have been different. You know, so I just hope by the time the Premier League come back, everything's back to normal and we can forget this last season plus the 15 games last season with no fans and enjoy it going forward with fans. That's my theory. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, and we're all fortunate that we'll be able to look back on this horrible, surreal, weird season as some kind of positivity, that we'll be able to think about it as a title triumph, which, you know, for a lot of clubs, this has been a very miserable time. Chris, just finally with yourself, firstly, how was Ben Gibson on commentary? Because I bet he was good fun. Obviously, we were at the game, so I couldn't hear it. But secondly, sort of looking forward to next season, and what are your thoughts on sort of how much they need to build the squad?
First of all, Ben Gibson was great. I was once the game started, I was a bit nervous about, you know, having a current player on air with us, because he suddenly realised, like, every time Andrew Omobamadeli touches the ball, you know, was it all right to say, I think he's really good, because he's, you know, he's got Ben Gibson's place in the team. So I was constantly worried about, you know, committing a faux pas and upsetting Ben Gibson. But he was brilliant. He was really professional. When he first came and he was there really early, which I was pleased about, and he came and sat down and we were chatting and he said he's never done commentary before. And he was we were sort of talking the way through it. And he was saying that, you know, whenever you do anything for the first time, it's a bit of a tense experience. And then he said, like, this is the way I felt when I went on Question of Sport. And I thought, what? So I thought, well, if you've done Question of Sport, mate, BBC Radio Norfolk is no problem if you've sat there and seen Barker and all. And he has. When he was a Middlesbrough player, he was one of the guests on Question of Sport. But he was fantastic. I think, you know, the fact that there was a title to collect and he was there to, well, not get his medal as it turned out in the end, but because they only had the medals for the players who were involved in the game, but to get his hands on the trophy, we were really lucky to have him with us. And the circumstances were just perfect to have a current player. And of course, everything he said was fascinating about, you know, everything from what Daniel Farke would have said at halftime to what the week had been like around the training ground with Tetti and Vrančić. So yeah, brilliant. I mean, I'd love to say it'd be great to have him back next season, Ben Gibson, but that suggests I don't want to see him in the team, which I don't want to say, because I think he's been brilliant this season alongside Grant Hanley. And as much as Norwich do need to strengthen and do need new players to come, clearly, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see if it is those two starting on the first day of the season, all being well. Yeah, they're going to need reinforcements. I agree with what Paul said. It'd be lovely to think that Oliver Skip might come back. But, I mean, you can see, can't you, that they're going to go about it in a very different way this time, because when they went up two seasons ago, they basically kept the whole squad together. Well, we already know that, you know, Vrančić has gone, Tetti has gone, Oliver Skip has gone. So suddenly that midfield looks quite threadbare. So that's one area of the team that is going to need a lot of work, a lot of strengthening over the summer. And I, like Paul, I hope that they can keep hold of the crown jewels. But if they don't, we've got to remember what's happened in the past. You know, when players like James Maddison have gone and we all thought, oh, you know, there's no replacing him. Actually, they found somebody. So it's over to Stuart Webber and the recruitment team to do the same thing again. So I am looking forward to it, because I think it's always great seeing Norwich in the Premier League. It's maybe not quite as thrilling as it once was because of the, you know, all this sort of stuff that's going on in the background, European Super Leagues, and you know, it's not quite what it once was, the Premier League. Plus VAR, that is a nightmare from a commentary point of view, because you don't know how excited to get when Norwich do score a goal. But it's a nice problem to have, because let's face it, as much as it's been brilliant this season, I always say this, I don't think the Championship would be anywhere near as exciting if you didn't get the Premier League prize at the end of it. You know, take that away, take away the idea of promotion and you just won the Championship. It wouldn't mean as much. It wouldn't feel as good. So that's what they've been playing for all season. hopefully the vast majority of this squad will get another crack at it, because, well, you know, 97 points from 46 games, they absolutely deserve it. And I hope as many of them as possible will be around next year to give it a go.
Top stuff. Thank you very much, boys. The Super League, you mentioned the Super League, Chris. We heard this phrase, legacy fans, didn't we? Well, I think ourselves and Radio Norfolk, we very much stand up for the legacy fans. That is very much our audience. So we'll always be there for you if that's what they're calling you. Right, we will roll through the squad, because we've got Connor coming up next alongside Terry Westgate and Spud. And while Tony subs the squad around, I'll just get through a few of your comments. There's quite a few coming in. Matt Gregory, great video, guys. Watched it from my home in Buckinghamshire, which is next to Bedfordshire, which is where Luton is, Connor, with a smiley face. So I'm guessing there maybe was a tiny error in there, was there?
I'm pretty sure I might have said Hertfordshire, actually. Yeah, possibly. I don't know. But, you know, close enough.
Everyone's always, those eagle eyes are always there, aren't they? Who else have we got? Besant 8 says, one City strong. Owen Young, it's party time. Sheldon, on the ball City, what a season. Mark Jones, brilliant season and fantastic coverage as ever by you guys on the ball City. Thanks, Mark. Joe McKenzie, looking forward to next season, not just to watch the football, but to see the fans again. Craig Brown, hello, gentlemen. Good evening. And there's a load more just flooded through, so I'll leave it for the second and come back to that in a bit. Terry, Spud, thank you very much for joining us. Terry, what we got there?
Just a bit of fizz.
Excellent. Right, well, I'll come to you first, Terry. How have you found it? I think we had you on the pod and stuff a few times, didn't we? In the Project Restart era, and when we were unsure about what was happening. How have you actually found following it from afar, and what things have you done to sort of make it enjoyable?
Yeah, it's been difficult, and not being at the games, you know, not being part of the atmosphere. I think I found it really difficult under Project Restart, I think, because the way that seemed to be rushed through, it didn't seem to be much consideration about for the fans or the football teams at all. It seemed to be like all about, you know, fulfilling contracts for TV companies. And also, we obviously didn't play very well, and it was just a bit of a horrible experience. I think with the new season, we kind of knew what was happening, kind of got used to watching it from afar, you know, being at home, watching it on iFollow or watching it, you know, listening to the radio. And I think the fact that Norwich then started to actually do well, it actually was often the highlight of the week, because when everything was locked down and you couldn't go out and you couldn't go to the pub, you couldn't see your friends or your family, often what you would look forward to would be watching Norwich City, because you knew it was going to be entertaining and it was going to be exciting. You do end up connecting with people. So, I mean, like the game yesterday, I actually had a video call with a couple of friends who are fans. So we watched it along together. So you kind of find ways to still connect with people. But, I'm desperate to be back. Desperate to be back at Carrow Road.
Oh, we can't wait until you're all back. Spud, I'll put the same question to you, really. How have you found it? We often see your photos with your daughter and stuff, trying to make the best of it. We normally have a story from you with something to do with nudity, so we'll maybe hold that one back for a little while, but I'm sure you've got one from at some point this season. But how have you found it all? Oh, we got the technology might have let us down on Spud as well. We'll come back to Spud and try that in a minute. Okay, Connor, if I come to you, let's talk a little bit about the documentary. The documentary, which everybody has hopefully watched before this or will after this. Tell us a bit about how it was all pulled together. You and Tony, our producer in the background here, a lot of hard work's gone into that, but we seem to be getting lots of really good feedback about it already.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm not quite sure how we've pulled it together, to be honest, but it's there. Tony deserves a lot of the credit on that front. I was just spouting nonsense for the most part, so that's good. But yeah, it was really nice, I think, actually, to sit down and reflect on it and to be able to put this season, which for all the reasons we spoke about has been surreal, unique, unprecedented, whatever sort of word you want to use, to put that into a reflective kind of piece that people can go back and view when, like you said in the last segment, they are speaking about it with their grandchildren. So hopefully we've done that. We've tried to get some decent voices as well talking about Norwich City. And yeah, I hope people really enjoy it. And certainly, as you say, Dave, the feedback so far beyond the Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire situation, and I think Tony got one of the scores wrong. I mean, it's been pretty good, and in terms of probably how we envisaged it when we sat down and spoke about it, probably a couple of months ago. I don't think it could have gone better, really. So yeah, I'm really chuffed with it, and I hope people enjoy it as well.
Yeah, good work. Make sure you have a watch of it if you haven't already. Shall we just try and bring Spud back in, Tony, and see how his connection is? Hi, Spud, how you doing?
Very well, very well. You good, self?
There we go. That's much better. I can hear you now. I think you probably heard what I said, but I said we normally get a story about nudity from you at some point. So
There's always a story.
Spud and Ori. How have you found it all? How have you found it following it from home? And what ways have you sort of managed to make it enjoyable?
I'm not going to lie, Joe. It has been tough. It's more of a case of, say, just watching at home, really. I only went to one game, the Forest game. So the majority of the games I've watched at home with my wife and my little girl. And how much it's great being with them, it hasn't been the same being in the ground. It has been tough at times. I'd hate to think what it'd be like if it's mid-table or we were struggling. It softened the blow that we were doing well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. I mean, not just because it's Ipswich, but for instance, Ipswich, because it's fresh in the mind, to have experienced the season they've had from a distance would be horrible, wouldn't it? So I'm going to ask you and, all three of you for your favourite moment of the season shortly. So start having a think about that. But you mentioned your daughter there, Spud. Is she as much of a Norwich City nut as you already?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. She is probably watching her videos like Peppa Pig or something like that beside me, but she's always next to me when we score the goals, and when we score, she does love me picking her up and jumping up and down. The only sad thing about when we played Huddersfield 7-0, that was a 7:45 kickoff time, so that was past her bedtime, so she didn't experience any of the seven goals, unfortunately.
So, did you manage to keep your voice down?
I make sure the doors firmly shut and all that.
Right, favourite moment of the season then. Terry, if I can come to you first, if there's one that stands out as the one that you will sort of remember this season for, what would it be?
It's difficult, isn't it? I think possibly the win against Brentford at home. That was just billed as being this massive game and they were like going to be the main rivals, which they didn't turn out to be in the end, did they? It turned out to be Watford, that they were going to be the ones that we were going to be competing for. And this, it was, you know, it's live on Sky. There just seems all this pressure mounting ahead of it. And then, although it was only 1-0, we won easily. You know, we made them look quite ordinary, I thought. So, and after that, you thought, it's, you know, I actually said, this is the title is now there for the taking for us. So I think that was probably quite an important moment. I mean, I was also lucky to go to some of the games that were at Carrow Road just before Christmas.
Right.
And that was pretty special to be there for them as well.
Okay. Lovely left-footed finish from Buendia again that night as well, wasn't it? We've seen a few of them. I spoke to him after the EFL Awards. When was that? It's all been such a blur. A couple of weeks ago, 10 days ago or so now. And I said to him about the left-footed goals and he just said, oh, well, I've been shooting more. I've always had a good left foot. You just haven't seen it. Just as simple as that, which is quite an Emmy answer, isn't it? Connor, your moment of the season, sort of the defining moment that you will always remember?
It's tough. I guess probably one of the Huddersfield goals, maybe. Terry's kind of stolen my answer. I was going to say the Buendia strike against Brentford. I think that for me was the moment where I kind of looked at it and thought, yeah, okay, this is a Norwich side that's heading back to the Premier League. So probably that. But in terms of enjoyment, probably I think it was it was Kieran Dowell's goal against Huddersfield where there was that nice bit of interplay between the two. In terms of pure, this side plays really good football. It was that moment. So that's how I probably define it. But there's been so many, but equally compared to 2 years ago, because there's so little emotion and they're behind closed doors, I don't think they maybe stand out as maybe they would have. Like 2 years ago, I remember the Christoph Zimmermann header against Reading, for example, and the way the Carrow Road exploded off that Timo Pukki's late winner against Millwall. You could probably list loads and loads. So if I had to sort of pick two for different reasons, it would be those two, I think. But yeah, so many moments. I think Norwich City fans have been blessed this year.
Spuddy, you on the beer there? I have to admit, I've been so busy today, I just didn't get a chance to nip out and get some beer.
Well, I was quite lucky. It was my birthday yesterday, and I got far too much beer for my birthday. So, yeah, so I'm away at the moment for beer at the moment.
Excellent. Is that a special edition keeper's top you're wearing as well?
That is, yes. Yes,
very nice.
Yeah, very nice indeed. It's had to be done.
Yeah, I thought Tim looked pretty sharp in that in the Reading game.
Yeah, I'm about to say, that's probably the first. I think it's the first ever goalkeeper top I ever got. So
I had a few when I was younger. The old sort of blue flex Brian Gunn sort of era, that mid 90s era. They were some colourful ones. Your moment of the season then, Spud?
Well, but I'm a bit like Terry. Mine would have been, well, I would have said Brentford, but another one that stood out for me was Stoke City. Because I can remember when I wrote my article that morning and seeing it, and I was saying how after our three games against Millwall, Middlesbrough and Swansea, that we're going to be okay. And there's a little bit of me thinking, oh, should I have said that? Should I not? And all that. And then we put a performance like that, and I'm thinking, yeah, for once I am right. We are going to be okay. There's absolutely nothing to worry about. So that stood out for me a lot, that game.
Absolutely. Right. Before we wrap up this section, we're going to look ahead to next season and what we think they need to do. But I'll just go for a few comments. Dubai Canary, see if we can tempt Paddy into a mention of Coventry City. They ended the season on a high. They certainly did. They scored 6 goals against Millwall yesterday, didn't they? We've got a few more here. Lisa Jack, glad they're leaving on a high. If they stay around too long, it can turn sour. Talking about Tetti and Branchit. It's Diane says she's here. Hi, Diane. Eddie Ivans, Paddy's going to get Adam Eder on loan to Coventry. That's not a bad shout. They had Sam McCallum this season, didn't they? Alex Alexander, great coverage throughout the season from the triumvirate from Archon and also Radio Norfolk's very own Chris Gorham. Good old Chris. Everybody loves Chris, don't they? BMR James, great points from Paul. We have definitely topped 100 points this season with fans in the carrot. Right, yeah, I see where you're going with that one. Right, well, Connor, if I come to you first, in terms of looking ahead, we're expecting a busy summer, basically, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And in my mind, immediately, I'm thinking you can't have enough central defenders. I think that's maybe the lesson that I've learned from last time around. So any sort of additions there would be necessary. I've kind of maybe changed my mind on Andrew Omobamadile in recent weeks, and I've gone from, yeah, he'll probably get a really decent championship loan, to actually thinking, well, he's 18, he's got time on his side. He only signed a professional contract, last November, December. It probably represents a step up for him to at least spend the first half of the season training with a Premier League squad, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, and also for the depth. So it wouldn't surprise me if Norwich maybe go into this season with a few more centre-backs, hopefully. And then I guess the other point is probably more physicality. And I think we spoke about this in a recent video or a podcast. My mind's don't know what we did yesterday. But there was a moment last season after Project Restart, and the players had drinks breaks, didn't they? So every so often, both teams would come to the side of the pitch. And it was in the West Ham game. And West Ham were obviously near the away dugout. Norwich were near the home dugout. And the difference in size between the two sides was really stark and really noticeable. So I think that's probably second on my wish list, so to speak. Probably defensive cover and then a bit more physicality. But hopefully they're in a better position. They've learnt the lessons this time. I think they will have that kind of advantage on their competitors. Watford, who haven't been in this position for a number of years, having to come back up and then stay up, although have a very good defensive record, and then whoever comes up in the playoffs. So they're probably the two I would highlight in terms of positions. I'll let the other guys speak about those, because I think there's probably several areas you could discuss. But for me, central defenders, physicality, I think that has to be the priority.
Okay, well, Barry Taylor says, I'd be surprised if the transfer activity were not already advanced. Rob Turner says, woot, woot, what an incredible season. And that he likes your style as well, Terry, which I presume means the fizz. Craig Brown says, what's the contract situation with Hernandez? How long is left on his contract? I'm pretty sure O'Neill's still got 2 years left. And of course, he's got a tattoo now as well, so he can't ever leave. He's tied to Norwich City forever. Right, Terry, well, if we move along in terms of looking ahead, how do you see the midfield situation in light of Skip and Tete's situation? Well, certainly Tete's not going to be here. And it's not looking likely that Skip will be here, certainly for the start of pre-season.
Yeah, no, definitely midfield seems to be the area that we need to look into most, I think. I mean, obviously, Rancic's leaving as well. I think that's where we need the most talent to come in. So I would definitely say, particularly that defensive role that Tete used to do, and Skip was brilliant at this year. One of the reasons we got promoted was at Oliver Skip. So if he's not going to be there, we need to be somebody who can step into his shoes. So I think that's really important. And to be honest, the most important thing is holding on to players, is that we don't lose, like, you know, your Todd Cantwells, your Emi Buendias. These are the players that will get us the goals. Will, you know, I mean, you look to the last time we were in the Premier League, and the first couple of months, we actually looked really good. We played some lovely football, and Todd Cantwell excelled at that level. He proved that he's more than capable of being a Premier League player. So holding on to him and Emi Buendia, I think, is as important. But yeah, midfield is where I would say we definitely need to recruit.
Yeah, the rhythm seemed to suit Todd nicely, didn't it? So and I think, you know, I think most people are probably expecting if one's going to leave, then it would be Max. Just in terms of that, it is probably his time. Buendia is just whether anyone can afford him really at the moment, isn't it? Whether one of those really big bids comes along, and it's going to be really interesting to see if he can continue to be as prolific in terms of goals and assists in the Premier League as he has been this season. Obviously, he won't be as prolific, but, you know, continuing that same sort of vein. A couple of comments. The Marvelous X says that was like watching a photo album of Spud selfies. And James Hodges says Spud's broadband seems to be slower than the Huddersfield defence tonight. Very good.
Sorry, guys.
We're good at working now. Gerald Taylor says the documentary was fantastic. It's that sort of initiative that makes the culture around Norwich so brilliantly unique. And Rob Turner says 97 points is an incredible achievement. So thanks for all the comments. Keep them coming. So, Spud, it's like we've planned it, but we'll move ahead to the forwards now. In terms of strikers, how do you see that situation evolving? Do you think that they do need to bring someone in? Would you like to see Wider out on loan? How do you want the strikers to be lining up once we kick off next season?
That's such a tough one to answer, because all three, Hugo and Kruger and Ida, have all got their strengths and all in different ways. Are they going to be good enough for the Premier League? That's the $64 million question. Now it's a tough one. We'd like to add more into that department, but it's to worry about the cost, and are we going to put all our eggs in one basket for strikers where, yeah, you see other clubs have done it, i.e. Sheffield United this season with Brewster paying $25 million for a striker who hasn't scored one goal for them. So, that is something I really would struggle to answer, and glad I'm not in charge of that.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting with Pookie's injury and stuff. You just got to hope that doesn't have a knock-on effect for Norwich. But you follow Rotherham a bit as well, don't you, Spud? So you must have been, we were sort of following it in the press box yesterday, because obviously we were in South Yorkshire, so a lot of the local journos were interested. That was so cruel on them, wasn't it?
I was gutted, really. I was obviously watching the Norwich game, and one of my Rotherham mates was just keeping me updated with little WhatsApp messages and all that. And the game kept going, I kept getting, we're going to be okay. But late goal and a deflected goal as well. But if Rotherham couldn't win, I think they only won one game in the last 11, 12 games, you deserve to go down, unfortunately. So tough on them. But yeah, the table doesn't lie after 46 games.
They had their opportunities, but Warniola still doing a great job. Terry, Spud, thank you very much for joining us. Spud, thanks for persevering with the broadband. Connor, yeah, if you stay where you are. All right, cheers. Connor, you stay where you are. We've got the quiz coming up, which you'll all be able to follow along with, of course, and have your own answers at home. It's a toughie. I've tried to level the playing field a little bit in terms of its questions where you've got to sort of answer closest to the number and stuff and things.
I was going to say, you've not thrown a couple of Coventry questions in there or something, have you?
Yeah. How many appearances does Peter Underlove play for Coventry? We'll bring Paddy back in. There he is. Just a few comments before we get going with the quiz, though. Rob Turner says, "Oh, that's so adorable," which I'm afraid I'm not sure what that was in relation to. but I'll say that was aimed in Terry's direction, shall we? Max Edmonds says, "Hi, guys. Thanks for all your great coverage this season. I'm an NCFC fan that lives in Bedford, and it's kept me going through this very tough time. And it's been the thing that has at times kept me going. Thanks very much, On the Ball City. Thanks very much for that, Max. I'm sure lots of people will be able to sort of agree with the similar sort of sentiment. Spoon Meat, which is a strange name, on YouTube. On the Ball City, Europa League next. And that will do for the second. Right, boys, Pad, how are you feeling about this quiz?
Yeah, I was just on mute there. I was just going to tell you how many appearances Peter and Love had for Coventry, if you want to know. Get your water out of the way.
I'm surprised you bothered to turn up, Pad, to be honest.
If he wasn't on such a tight shot, what you'd see below him was about five different applications open with Google on the go, ready to get the answer Googled.
Right, well, let me first tell you who you're both representing. We opened this up earlier. The shirt you can see behind me is what you're playing for, the special edition home shirt, which the club released recently. Really nice idea. And we asked Twitter users to retweet a tweet about tonight, and those who did retweet were entered into the draw. And the two names chosen at random, Paddy, you are representing Owen Bell. I think I'm presenting that that name correctly. Owen Bell, which is at Owen Bell NCFC. And Connor, you're representing Bob Langdon, who is at Bob Langdon 7 on Twitter. So they are the two who are in the running for the shirt, depending on who wins. And of course, you guys can play along at home as well. So if you're both ready, number one, your first two questions are Alex Tete themed, which I thought was nice and appropriate. So Alex Tete has been booked how many times in his Norwich City career? I will give a point to the person who is closest. I'll read it again. Alex Tete has been booked how many times in his Norwich City career? Connor, as reigning champion, you have the honours and you can go first.
I feel like this might be quite high. 37.
Interesting. Pad.
Just to clarify here, Dave, has to be under the actual answer as opposed to, you know, it's not the nearest two. So if it was 38, would Connor be out of the running?
No, I'll give a point to the closest.
Either one.
Yeah, either one. Yeah, well, which is going to test my maths.
No, I was going to say 40 purely on the basis that I've counted out there. That was about 10 seasons, my basic maths. I reckon he must have accumulated average for a season. So I'm going to say 40.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it was as many as this. I recounted and recounted. 65.
65.
65 yellow cards.
But he didn't get any red, did he? Am I right? So no. He never sent off. Yeah.
Never sent off for Norwich. So that's the big one, wasn't it? But he got into double figures a few times. So, I didn't think it was going to be quite as many as that. But for a bonus point, can you tell me how many he got this season? Connor, I'll come to you first.
Probably not that many. I will say...
Put a number on it.
Two.
Two. Pad?
I don't think he didn't play a massive amount. I'm going to say one.
One. Pad has taken both the early points because he didn't get booked this season.
There you go. Yeah, he didn't play many minutes. He wasn't really... He didn't play a lot of minutes, did he, in total? So
I think that was only his fifth league start yesterday. So that's the way that for Tete to go out, isn't it? So Pad takes an early lead, Connor. You got to up your game.
Well, what you do is you give him a false sense of security, and then you start playing properly. So question two, it was always sort of my target, to be honest.
You want to start refreshing them devices out of shot a bit quicker, mate.
Right, here we go then. Question two. This one's a bit tougher, I think. Tete scored four goals for Norwich in the Premier League. Can you name the four clubs that he scored against? So Alex Tete, I think he scored eight goals overall, but four of them were in the Premier League. Can you name the four clubs that he scored against? I presume two of them are probably going to be quite easy to get. The other two, maybe not quite so obvious. I mean, I know the answer, so it's difficult to judge. but just one last time for those following along at home. Tete scored four goals for City in the Premier League. Can you name the four clubs?
Do we get a point for each one we get right, Dave?
Yes, you get a point for each one on this one.
Okay.
Right, so Pat, if you...
That tells me he knows all four, which isn't a good scenario to be in because I can only think the two obvious ones.
Okay, well, I was going to come to you first, Pat, but let's go to Connor first. He's got the smile.
Sunderland.
Yep.
Man United.
Yep.
Southampton.
Yep.
Bournemouth.
Oh, he's let it down at the last. So 3 points for Connor there. So you're taking the lead, depending on how Pat does. I presume he's going to get two. So he should be back in the lead.
The first two, yeah. Sunderland and United, obviously. As Paul gave us the answer in the first segment, if we wasn't aware anyway. I wouldn't have got Southampton, so I'm going to be honest on that one. Newcastle.
Sheffield United. He scored last season, didn't he?
He did, yeah. It was the River End, wasn't it? Yeah, like near post. Yeah.
I had Bournemouth in my head. I knew the goal as well. Oh, it's poor that. Never mind.
There we go. So, after two rounds, we've got five questions.
Paddy is leading. Daddy Dave. They're not all Tetney themed, as much as we love the bloke and it's his week.
No. Next one's on Brancic. yes, heading into question three, Pad's leading 4-3. So Connor's making a comeback. Mario Vrancic scored 15 league goals for Norwich, but only one of those was in his first season. Can you remember who it was against? I think this one's quite tough. I don't think I could have got it. I'll repeat it. Mario Vrancic scored 15 league goals for Norwich, but only one of those was in his first season. Can you remember who it was against? I will give you a clue, but it's probably not much of a clue, considering we're talking about the season 2017-18. It was set up by Madison. So that might not narrow it down too much.
Was it a free? It wasn't a free kick, obviously, by you saying it was set up by Madison. It wasn't a free kick, was it?
I think it was a set piece.
It was a set piece.
Right, I tell you what, we'll keep going to give you a bit more thinking time on that one. I'll give you question four as well so that we can keep things moving because this is another one. Whoever gets closest gets the point. Question four, Daniel Farke has just completed his fourth season in charge of Norwich City. How many games has he overseen? How many games has Farke been in charge for? And as I say, closest gets the point with that one. Right, Pad, you're in the lead, so I'll come to you first for your...
I'm just doing the maths, Dave, just doing the maths, as they say. So,
this total count,
league and cup per season, yeah?
Yeah, all games, all competitions. Farke, in his four seasons, how many has he been in charge of?
Right, hang on. Just do me addition now.
Connor, chip in if you've already got a number.
188.
Yeah, maths. I'm hopeless at maths.
188.
188. Southwell, what are you thinking?
Yeah, that's close, actually, isn't it? 18. I'll go 187, and then we'll see.
That's not in the spirit of it, is it?
Well, it's tactical.
I've basically done the work here. There's no way. If this is below 187, this is wrong on a moral level.
He's gone tactical. All right. Well, the bonus point question on top of that is how many of them have been wins? And I'll get the answer from Connor first. So, Connor, you said 187. How many do you think were wins?
Trying to think of his win rate, which is what? It's over 50%, isn't it? I think.
That is some serious maths if you can work out off the percentage.
87.
Right. And Pad, how many wins?
I'm going to say 88, Dave.
Unbelievable. You two. Right, okay. So, Farke has been in charge of 195 games. So, Pad gets the first point. But there have been 85 wins. So, Connor gets the second point. before we move on to the fifth one, because that's looking like it might be a bit of a tiebreaker, let's go back to question three. which was Mario Vrančić scored 15 there. Look at the platinum hair. That's what we want. Brilliant. Those were the days. Mario Vrančić scored 15 league goals for Norwich, but only one of those was in his first season. Can you remember who it was against? Has anyone got an answer for me?
I'm happy to have a guess, but beforehand, if Pad wins this quiz, he's got to have his hair like that, hasn't he? The Vrančić gold.
We've got
to go back to that.
Platinum Paddy.
Yeah, I'll have a stab and say Reading.
Okay. And Pad?
Hull.
Hull. Connor's pulled it out of the bag. 3-2 home win over Reading in March 2018. It was a header. Grant Hanley scored a header and Madison scored a penalty for the third. But it was a Madison corner that set up Vrančić.
Which side did you use for that one, Connor?
This one, mate.
So we do have a tiebreaker and the question's perfect for it. This makes it sound like I've planned this so much better than I have. You are tied on 5 points each. So this is the decider for the shirt. Who will be getting it, Owen or Bob? Question five. Ben Gibson averaged the most passes per game in the City squad this season. How many did he average? And closest gets the point. I'll read it again. Ben Gibson averaged the most passes per game in the City squad this season. How many did he average? Which is a reminder of how good he was, how well he was playing before he got injured, of course, and Omar Bamadeli came into the team. And his passing stats have been pretty good as well, haven't they? Right. I don't know who I'm going to come to first here. So
I'm just using the calculator. I'm not checking. I'm just using the calculator. True story. If I could share screen, and I'll even tell you the calculation. I'm going to do 18 passes,
and I reckon 18
per game. Yeah, per game times.
Right. Okay.
He was injured way towards the end of the season, so I don't know exactly how many he played. I'm going to say 36 games. 648.
Right. Well, it's per game though.
I was going to
per game. Sorry, I thought it was a total.
It's his average per game.
18 then, 18.
You're going for 18 per game.
You know what he's going to do now? He's going to go one below.
Pad thinks 18 passes per game, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's more than that. I think it'll be 75. And then...
75?
Just plus, I'll take it. Passes a game, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
passes a game. I thought we meant completed passes.
Yeah, I think that is completed passes. Yeah. Well, anyway, Connor's won. It was 78 per game. Gibson and Matt's.
Oh, that's
low,
pretty close, isn't it?
I've had an absolute murder, haven't I? I've cracked under the pressure.
I'll tell you what, Pad. It's a good job you did that calculation.
Yeah, you know what it is. To echo Kenny McLean, I've had a few of these this afternoon. That's probably what I'm going to put it down to.
There was a little bit of brain freeze there, I think, because Gibson had a few.
It's all good fun. Sorry, Owen. Sorry about that. Total breakdown. But,
he was so close, Pad. I think Gibson had a few games where he had over 100 passes, didn't he? So because he just became that sort of tempo man, didn't he, at the back, a bit like Tim Close used to be.
This not underlined definitively. I have no interest in stats or anything to do with stats. There you go.
Don't worry, Pad. The next one's on XG.
Yeah. If it's on XG, I'll be going that way.
Well, well, there you go, Bob. You've got a shirt coming your way, courtesy of Mr. Southwell, who maintains his unbeaten winning streak, 3 in a row. I hope you enjoyed following along with that at home. I'll just take, before we start the final part of Pink and Live 3, we've got our colleagues David Hannon and Ian Clark coming on alongside Paddy. So, Connor, thank you very much. That you can leave victoriously.
that for me, that's done. That's the highlight of my evening now. So, happy day.
Yeah. Good work. Just take this opportunity to remind you of the charity that we're supporting tonight. If you do have a few pounds going spare that you would like to send in the direction of a charity this evening, the Jeff Astle Foundation, as mentioned at the top of the show, of course, we've seen a few former Norwich City players pass away in recent years. Duncan Forbes, Martin Peters, and Mike Sutton most recently, only in December, Chris Sutton's dad, who started his career at Norwich, who have all had battles with dementia before they passed away. So we wanted to support them. Ewan Roberts, of course, one of our columnists, he has been involved with the UEA in some of the research that they're doing into the effect on sports people after they've retired along those lines. So, of course, it's a major issue in the sport. And if you can spare a few pounds, then do head along to the jeffastallfoundation.co.uk/donate.
Welcome to the new normal.
Hello, and welcome to this series of Unfinished with me, Charles Thompson.
Welcome to Weird Norfolk.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast.
From true crime to football, politics to folklore, for more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
Right. If they are on board, then let's bring Ian Clark and Dave Hannant, who I can see are in the waiting room, both in their yellow and green Norwich City shirts. Hello, boys. How are you?
We're really good, Dave. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm going to ask you both. I'll tell you now so that you've got a bit of thinking time. Your favourite goal of the season. But Mr. Hannant, you're a man who likes to get emotionally entwined in a Norwich City player. How close have you been to shedding tears about Mr. Tete's exit this weekend and Mario, of course, as well?
I mean, I'm obviously devastated about both of them going though. But I must admit, the only departure where I think I actually have literally shed a tear was Wes Houlihan. That game against Leeds, that the perfect goal, which there is not a single player in the country who could successfully ricochet the ball off both posts and off a player. So Wes was the big one for me. But you know, I think maybe because I'm a little bit disconnected this year, and it's not in the same way, I wasn't watching on iFollow or anything to that effect. Maybe it wasn't. Might have been a bit harder to see, but. Yeah, Tete has been a fantastic servant, one of the big characters you get to play for us. And yeah, of course, it's a shame to see him go. Ditto with Rancic, who, beautiful man, both on the pitch and beautiful man in general. Those eyebrows just confuse me. But yeah, they're not going to be many moments. You know, they're not going to be, you know, players like those two are few and far between. And obviously, it's a huge shame to see him go. But that's football, isn't it? You know, I didn't think I was ever going to recover from Wes going or Grant Holt leaving, or I think Darren Eady, when I was a child, I think I shed a few tears when we sold him to Leicester. But yeah, you know, it is what it is, you know, and there are always going to be more heroes, aren't there?
There are. As we've seen a nice little line of it, haven't we? Madison came in sort of alongside Wes almost, and then Emmy and Todd have taken up the mantle from there. Clarkey, how have you found this weekend? It's been quite an emotional one, hasn't it?
Really emotional, yeah. And I think as Dave said, not being there makes it very different. But I think watching, you know, Farke's pre-match presser talking about Mario, talking about Tete. And just seeing, I've forgotten the hair that Mario had in those early days. Oh, I think, Paddy, you do need to go there, mate.
That would look brilliant.
Maybe I should. Maybe before I actually go silver, I should just have a calendar.
That's what I was going to say. I think I'm halfway there.
Yeah, and it was a funny game to watch from home. I thought Barnsley yesterday played well, and I really hope they go up, but. You know, it was good to. It would have been nice to have got those 99 points, but to have not lost to finish in style with all of those points, it was not a perfect end to the season, but certainly a good one. But the last few weeks, you know, when we clinched promotion, when we then won the title, and yesterday as a whole, it's just been a phenomenal few weeks.
It has. Right, I'm going to come to you both about your favourite goal in a minute. But, Pad, we've had a few questions about the striker situation. So I'll just go through a few comments before we come to them. Eddie Ivan says, we will need another striker if Adam Eder goes out on loan. Dubai Canary said, good point on physical size. Connor saw Newcastle win at Leicester on Friday. Some of their best players look like giant beasts, which sounds quite scary. Tom Calton, need a striker, in my opinion. Can't lay all the burden on Pukki. Pad, what do you make of the striker situation, given that we've just seen, well, it's concerning, the Pukki situation, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And for the lad, first and foremost, saw him there yesterday. You know, he had a protective boot on. And the Euros, sadly, same applies to Kenny McLean now after yesterday's game. We're talking 4 or 5 weeks before the tournament begins. So it's very difficult to see those guys being, well, certainly fit and in peak condition. And the knock-on effect then, obviously, going into Norwich is pre-season in the Premier League. But if we bring it back down to the strikers, yeah, there's no doubt. But I thought it was quite interesting and put it to Daniel. You know, Adam Eder scores yesterday, last day of the season, scored on the opening day, the winner against Huddersfield. And in between, he's had, you know, terrible luck with injuries. He was obviously one of those who was diagnosed with coronavirus. And his season never really got started on a personal level. But you saw the instincts there yesterday. You know, it was a simple finish in the end, but he had to get himself in that position, and it was a very calm finish. And as Daniel always says, that is a guy who knows where the goal is, whatever level he's gone up. And sadly, for reasons outside of his control, he didn't get maybe the season we thought he would. But I wouldn't necessarily, to take one of the questions there, at this stage, think he's going out alone. I think very much he will come back in pre-season. And if he impresses, we saw it with Todd Cantwell the pre-season prior to the Premier League last time around, it's not beyond the realms under Farke that he might be a bit closer to a Norwich 11 in the Premier League. But obviously, ultimately, looking at the resource now, if you throw Jordan Hugel into the mix, with a fair wind, it's Teemu Pukki opening day of the season. But I just think now with this situation around Teemu, with the fact that Adam is so improving and Jordan Hugel didn't really cut it at West Ham in the Premier League, and the experience of last time around, that they were so overly reliant on Teemu, and we saw what happened when he got an injury at Leicester midway through and was never the same player again. And that was one of the main factors why Norwich slid down that table so alarmingly. I think they will look to address it. They've already been linked with the guy whose name escapes me now, but the top scorer in the Eredivisie a couple of weeks back, a Greek lad at Venlo. You'll see a good few more strikers linked, because ultimately everything they're going to do this summer is framed through what they didn't do two summers ago and what they maybe wasn't able to do in terms of the finances. And we know how difficult it is going to be to bring in a striker who's capable of scoring goals in the Premier League. What did they do two seasons ago? They went down the route of bringing in Josip Dermić, brought him on a free, so it made sense financially. But clearly, those injuries that he's had in his career in the latter years in the Bundesliga, it took their toll, and he wasn't really able to step into Timu's shoes. They won't want to make that mistake again. So I think as we sit here right now, irrespective of what happens with Teemu and his injury and his fitness, they will definitely look to bring in a striker. I'm pretty sure of that, yeah.
Yeah, well, Mark Jones says, I'd like us to go for Adam Armstrong at Blackburn. I think most of us would agree with that, but I think you're probably talking about a 15, 20 million pound player there. And it's very unlikely the Norwich are going to be splashing that much cash on one player, unless, of course, they really were to sell the crown jewels for a lot of money. Dave, if I come back to you, your favourite goal of the season?
It's a tricky one because there's been so many brilliant ones, but the one that leaps out at me immediately in my mind is Todd Cantwell's at Sheffield Wednesday. Partly because of, obviously, you know, it's his weak foot, it's an amazing finish, kind of bent into the top corner. But the thing that leaps out to me is more the assist than the actual goal, because, you know, from Buendia in the build up to it, that tackle, you know, it's the kind of crunching tackle you'd expect from like an Alex Tetti. And not only that, he kind of then had the wherewithal to get not only win the ball clean like that, but get back on his feet, you know, thread a ball through the eye of the needle, and Todd's finish kind of made it the complete package. I think if it wasn't for the fact that Emmy nearly fell over Ben Gibson in the build-up, that made it look a little bit on the ugly side. But for that, you know, that tackle and then that through ball and that finish all in one kind of piece kind of made that the one for me.
That's a good shout. And I like that when we've come back to you, your wine glass is now empty.
Yeah, I wish that it had wine in it, but I'm not allowed to drink at the minute, so it was J2O.
Oh, well, never mind. I mean, that's a good shout, Clarky. Well, I mean, obviously, you're a big Todd Cantwell fan, as the king of Dereham yourself, where does your decision go?
Well, I mean, Dave's right. There've been so many great goals. I mean, you could probably have a goal of the season contest in that Huddersfield game alone. I mean, some of the goals in there were phenomenal. I'm going to go a little bit left field, and I'm going to pick a Emi Buendia goal. No one's going to be particularly surprised at that. He scored so many. Mine's actually going to be the one. It was a bit of a messy goal, but it was the one back in December when we beat Forest 2-1 at Carrow Road. Not the purest goal. You're all probably wondering where I'm going with this. It was actually the last goal that I saw in the flesh, because it's the only game this season that I've been able to watch. That was that period when we were laid back in. So to see a goal in the flesh, and that was one of those sort of important wins at that time, just to get us going at what wasn't the most fluid period of the season. So yeah, loads of Buendia goals, but that was my favourite because it was actually the last one I saw in person.
Nice answer, I like it. And sort of a late winner-ish as well, I suppose, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you make of Todd, actually, Clark? Yeah, I mean, would I be fair to say that he almost feels a bit like he's flying under the radar a bit at the moment when you think about how much he's actually achieved? You didn't really hear many people talk about him in the player of the season mix too much, but he has had a very good season, hasn't he?
He's had a very good season. I mean, when I did my column a few weeks ago on player of the season, and you know, there was the debate over the Skip versus Buendia, and obviously you throw Timo in the mix and Hanley certainly, and I think I'd said that at that stage, Todd was probably my eighth or ninth choice. And, you know, to think of a lad who's got so much talent, who, you know, you're absolutely right, dear and boy, we love him to bits. For him to be so far down that pecking order probably says more about how good the team's been as a whole rather than him. I mean, I think there have been times he's been a bit quiet. Obviously, we had that period where he was out of favour, didn't play. Daniel clearly sorted him out, and he came back much better, much stronger. But I think he's certainly had a 7.75 season. So he made maybe an 8 out of 10. But is he going to go anywhere? We hear so many rumours, don't we? I mean, everyone in Dereham knows someone who knows someone who's his best mate's, you know, uncle's brother who works down the pub and knows, seen him here, there, and everywhere. I've got a this is not based on any fact at all. I've got a sneaky feeling he is going to stay. He's going to give it another go, and he is going to shine next season.
Yeah, I went to uni in Stoke, and it was like that with Robbie Williams. Every local that you met had a cousin or an aunt or something who'd babysat for Robbie Williams when he was a kid or whatever.
And the funny thing is, he must have about 25 houses, Todd, because everybody says, oh, yeah, Todd lives there. I know where I've been passing down. That's that place, four bedroom, you know, this, that and the other. So he's obviously got a portfolio of property as the lad. But no, he's top man. And the video we saw yesterday of him showing the trophy to the little and through that fence, I just thought, you know, it summed up Todd. And it's summed up Norwich City, and there's just been so many moments, haven't there, in recent days where you think
someone was there to capture it on camera.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Dave, you cynic. You can tell he's been on the J2O. you're such a hardened hack, aren't you? But those genuine moments that just say that's why we love the badge, that's why we're proud of our team, and that's why we're proud of the lads who play for us.
Yeah, he's a good lad, Todd. I know people probably read too much into his social media persona, but when you see things like that in real life, he's got a good heart. I think that's safe to say. Look, Pad, let me throw you a little bit of a hospital pass then. And from following on from that, where do you think we stand in terms of Cantwell's future? Because it's gone a bit quiet on that front, really, hasn't it, in terms of rumours and things like that. And it might have just suited Norwich quite nicely, the way he's had a good second half of the season, hasn't he? And he's in a good place heading into the Premier League, and maybe there won't be too much distraction.
Well, time will tell. Well, we both know, unfortunately, sadly, there will be plenty of speculation because that comes with the territory now and amplified by digital channels. So I think it'll be fairly incessant around him, Emmy, and obviously Max, N3. But I was speaking to somebody at Barnsley yesterday, actually, and who's a bit closer to sort of the Premier League situation at the moment. And they were just really coming at it from an angle that, and we know They're under decent length contracts. We know Stuart Webber's approach in terms of the valuation of these individuals or any of Norwich's better players. And that if it doesn't meet those requirements, it won't be happening. And they think that a lot of the Premier League clubs are really going to feel the bite from the financial fallout from obviously the pandemic and then the lack of finance in terms of, you know, fans coming through the turnstile. Yes, of course, they have the broadcast revenue, but still, you know, they're having to plug holes as Norwich are, but maybe to a lesser degree if they've got wealthy benefactors. But I think there's still, that seems to be a sense that there won't be lavish sums spent this summer. And if that is the case, you know, we might not see the sort of moves for players in those brackets of valuation. I mean, we can all pluck figures out, can't we? But, you know, Max, 35, 40 million, Buendia maybe the same, Todd maybe a little bit less so. His portfolio isn't quite as lengthy as those other two, but still a substantial amount for a young English player with his all the talent in the world who could be anything he wants to be in the game. And ultimately, it might be less about what an individual wants or their people around them or even Norwich as a club. I think it will just be what the market dictates this summer. And it's going to be really intriguing to see how much business or lack of is done, because ultimately, you know, to repeat what I just said there, Stuart Webber is not going to be selling those three or any of Norwich's best assets on the cheap. So if they don't get the type of bids they feel those players are worth, then it's irrelevant really what Todd, Max or Emmy or the people around them want this summer to happen. It's ultimately down to somebody in terms of a potential suitor coming to Norwich with the type of money that is going to make sense for Norwich. And that's ultimately what it boils down to. So for me, trust in Stuart Webber. You know, he's proven what a negotiator he is and what a hard bargain he drives. You know, and it's not just the Madison and the Godfrey level deals and Jamal as well and the sort of circus with Liverpool prior to the Newcastle. But I saw somebody on Twitter the other day talking about he'd actually got, you know, reportedly £1 million for Marley Watkins from Bristol City, which, given Marley Watkins' career path since, just underlines, you know, what a negotiator that man is to deal with. So I would trust in Stuart Webber that none of those players or any players will leave Norwich unless it makes sense for Norwich this summer.
Robert Marsh says, outstanding season from the lads. Let's show the Premier League what we can really do next season. Dave Hannan, let's bring the curtain down on Pink and Live 3. I don't think, strangely enough, we haven't really spoken about him too much. You and Clarkie both mentioned him in your goal of the seasons. But Emi Buendia, just how good has he been? I think it was probably October, November time when I started saying regularly in my video verdicts that he was too good for the Championship. He shouldn't be playing at that level. And he was just the outstanding player. That has clearly been vindicated by the fact he's won Championship Player of the Season. And we discussed in our last pod, just sort of, if there was one word you could use to describe him, although I want you to follow up with some more, what would that word be?
Ridiculous, I think, it is my one word. Because I honestly don't think, and I'm not just talking about for Norwich City, I don't think I can think of a single one player that has had a greater impact on one Championship season than him. You know, I know people kind of wax lyrical about a Delta Apt at QPR, but I, you know, as one that stood out. And even, you know, the year that we went up in right early days of with Huckabee. But in honesty, I can't think of one player who's looked so on another level to the rest of the league than him. Yeah. You know, there have been players who maybe have scored more, but I just think all over the pitch, you know, even his defensive work, you know, you probably struggle to find an attacking midfielder who does more defensive work than him or, you know, in terms of creating chances, because obviously he's got, you know, I hate assist as a stat because, you know, I could rant for days about this and expected goals. That's what absolute tosh. But in terms of what he creates and what he makes happen, I don't think there's been a single player in the Championship, certainly this century, that has had that much of an impact than Buendia. And I think as good as, you know, we've had plenty of standout players this season. You know, Ollie Skip was phenomenal and, you know, Timu Pukki scored 25 goals and Todd Cantwell was doing his stuff. But I don't think there's ever been a more obvious player of the season than Buendia. And I think if you take Buendia out of that team, we're probably looking at finishing sixth instead of first.
And Clarkie, just finally, your views on the Argentine who Delia was serenading on the pitch.
Just before I talk about Emmy, I do know that Dave Hannon, I work with him all week. He will go on about expected goals and assists all week. So feel for me over the next few days. I think with Emmy, I mean, his skill is outrageous, but it is that all round. You know, that I've forgotten which game it was, but that tackle that won us the ball that then set up a goal. I can't remember which game it was, but
it was a Sheffield Wednesday game. The Campbell, yeah.
Crazy tackle. And his work rate, his effort, and I know that sometimes gets him in a bit of bother, but he is sensational. And you know, I slightly disagree with Dave. I think we would have finished higher than sixth without him, but he has been a massive difference. And I think if he can stay for next season, he gives us a huge chance of staying up. One stat I did just spot, you might have all seen this, is thanks to NTSC numbers. What a great Twitter feed that is. Of the last eight teams that have finished on 97 points or more in the championship, all of them have gone on to next season to finish at least 14th in the Premier League in the following season. So
those, you know, are the stats I can get on board with.
Yeah, if that's what you know, our success this season has meant, and we can replicate that to even, you know, an extent next season, build on that, get the momentum going, then I think we've got a good chance.
Top stuff. Just a couple of comments to finish on. Eddie Ivins, Stuart Webber has always said, if they don't get the right money and it doesn't improve the player, we won't be selling. And Chris Dayton, I can honestly see us still having all the crown jewels when the window closes. If we had to let anyone go, for me, it would be Todd and Max. But we will see. It's going to be a very interesting summer. Chaps, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much to all of our guests tonight. That is Pink and Live 3. That is the end of the 2021 season as far as we're concerned. As mentioned a few times during the show, jeffastallfoundation.co.uk/donate is the place to go to if you would like to support the charity that we have been supporting tonight. We're hoping, before the pandemic arrived, we were looking at trying to organise a proper Pink and Live event in real life, at a pub, at a bar, somewhere like that, where fans could come along and we can actually have a chat face to face, and you know, we'll be up on stage with microphones and have a good chat, maybe after a game, something like that. So we're hoping at some point next season, we'll be able to line something up like that, mainly because if we can do that, that means you guys will be back at Carrow Road and life will be getting back to normal. So fingers crossed from all of us, of course, that we are back towards normality next season. But what we do know is Norwich City are heading back to the Premier League as champions in style, and it's been a great season. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Pinker.com, of course, is the place to go. We'll keep you up to date with all the latest Norwich City news and views. Our documentary, which was released tonight, that's available on the Pinker YouTube channel. And if you haven't already seen it, the poem read by Stephen Fry to those we've missed, which is you guys, the Norwich City fans. Thanks very much for watching.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.